Jeff.
Hey, Eric.
How are you?
I'm pretty good. How are you?
Doing well, thank you. I am riding off the high that was this weekend's AKA battle. This was Swiss Beatz versus Timbaland. This was Erykah Badu versus Jill Scott. This was Teddy Riley versus Babyface. This was The Dream versus Sean Garrett.
I mean, this was two huge names. Eric.
Yeah.
And Jeff.
finally
in the same. People have been asking for so long, how do we get Eric versus Jeff?
They were tired of Eric and Jeff.
Yeah.
Now they want Eric versus Jeff.
They were like, you know, we've seen Eric versus Ludacris.
Yeah. You know, I think this was your idea, so mm-hmm. congratulations for...
Yeah, I guess I was the winner then.
dreaming this up mm-hmm. and creating it and putting it out into the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And shout out to all the people who joined us. This was for our Patreon users, our Patreon family, our Patreon subscribers.
Yeah.
This was a chance for us to give back, because what Patreon is a method of supporting things you like.
Yeah.
And apparently there's a lot of people who like what we're doing right here.
Which is dope.
Which is really awesome. And actually, shout out to all you guys.
Before that, I want to shout out a few of our more recent subscribers, just because...
That's what we do.
That's what we do. We've shouted everybody else out, so now these new people. I want to shout out Olivia Martin. I want to shout out Ahmad Dennis, Emily O'Connor, Darren Jones, James McCray, and Valerie Carrington.
Those are all people who recently joined.
Yesterday? Yeah.
Well, that's awesome.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out to all you guys. We really appreciate that. I'm so happy that they were around to join in this AKA battle.
Yeah, I want to say, so Ahmad Dennis gave a sizable amount.
Yes.
And so when people give a sizable amount, I ask them for their t-shirt size, their address, and their phone number.
Yeah.
And I FaceTime them.
Just, yeah.
Well, as a surprise.
No longer a surprise.
Yeah, I know. I gave it away. But that being said, I FaceTimed Ahmad. He was on the job. He was wearing his N95 mask.
Essential work.
I don't know where he was working. It didn't seem like a hospital.
But he was somewhere.
Yeah, he had like a saw in his hand or something.
Yeah, a saw.
He had some sort of tool in his hand.
He was doing essential work.
He was cutting something open.
And you...
Hopefully it wasn't a body.
You surprised him.
I surprised him. He was like, this is great. I'm working. Talk to you later.
I do want to say this. Mm-hmm. People have been so generous, whether it's $2 a month, $3 a month, all the way up to a lot of money.
$500,000.
A month.
Yep.
And that money is going right back into all the good work that you guys expect from us, that we want to put out there, and that we envision moving forward.
Yes.
We have recently adapted our tiers over at Patreon.com.
Edited. Edited is the word.
Edited them.
So, I mean, like, you know, we had these ideas of what our Patreon could be, but, you know, in a pre-COVID world, they made sense.
Yeah.
Now they didn't.
Right.
You know, we're not going to invite people over to our apartment.
Nope.
We're not going to be sending out things as much as we wanted to. You know, there were some things that needed to be redone. But
right.
That being said.
Yes.
Now it's perfect.
We're back.
Mm-hmm.
We're back. Patreon.com/itsthereal.
But while we're here, we should give people like a little taste of what some of the AKAs that we shouted out during our AKA battle.
Okay, it was 30 of
rounds.
Our best
yeah.
AKAs,
mm-hmm.
stuff that we have cataloged through the years. For the last 10 years, we have something like 400 or 500 of these things each.
Mm-hmm.
We narrowed it down to
yep.
our top 30. We even gave people some that we weren't going to use. I expected some from you. You expected some from me. There was strategy involved.
There was no strategy involved, at least for me. I read them basically top to bottom.
I definitely had strategy.
And that's why you won.
But you wanted to, well, in some people's eyes, I won.
Okay, you don't have to make me feel better. Just
no, but I do want to say this real quick. We took a walk afterwards. We were like, that was great. We walked out of here feeling really good. And you said to me, you were like, yo, that was the best possible outcome. Like that it was so even
mm-hmm.
that it was hard to tell who won, or it wasn't a blowout. Because if it was a blowout, that would be really bad.
If it was 29-1, that would have been a real bummer.
Yeah, honestly. And this shows, you know, we both come at this with our own voice and our own creativity and our own sense of humor.
Yeah.
And you see that in each thing. I think it was a joy for people to relive these, hear the stories behind them, and vote and be a part of this. So again, shout out to everybody who was
there.
I
think I could fucking take you next time.
We'll have to see. Maybe we'll do it on Instagram.
Yeah.
A real versus. But you wanted to go over some of these, just some of our favorites.
29-1. That's what it's going to be next one.
I got a kick out of you know, going through these and finding ones that I was like, oh yeah, that was really great. You know, I find that a whole bunch of mine, for whatever reason, are like math or like science. You know, I had one where it was, yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. 25,000 miles, a.k.a. if I ruled the world. Mm-hmm. You know, I've had ones that were like, yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Let me see if I can find this here. Because there's so many to remember. Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. busting slugs, a.k.a. sodium chloride.
Really good.
Yeah. And then you have ones, you know, this is the one that I finished off with. I had two closing rounds. I was like, this one's going to like just like destroy. I was like, yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. Paul Revere, a.k.a. Soulja Boy Tellum.
So good.
That was one where it was like, you know, you want to make it performative too.
Yeah.
So you slow it down. It's like being in a
it was like a
rap battle.
Yeah, rap battle.
You know? And then, so I had that one. And then my last one that I pulled out, I was like, this is for all the true Game of Thrones fans and fanatics out there. Yo, what up? It's Eric, a.k.a. the Night King, a.k.a. Iced Out the Watch. And that was another performative one. And yeah. I walked off after that, and that felt like really good. Anyway, those are some of my favorites. I just, you know, Lumberjack Championship, a.k.a. Rolling Trees, Fondue, a.k.a. Dipset, Trap or Die, a.k.a. the Oregon Trail, you know, man, Whippin' Farins, a.k.a. Indiana Jones, First of the Month, a.k.a. Last Time That I Checked. So a lot of that. How about you?
I have... Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Still Getting Cake, a.k.a. Dylon, 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 Dylon.
Fan favorite.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Riding on 16s, a.k.a. R. Kelly. Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Gimme Little Head, a.k.a. Zika Virus.
Yeah.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Sammy Davis Jr., a.k.a. Son of Sam.
I'd forgotten about that one. Really, really funny one.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Uchi Wally Zerbiak, a.k.a. Player of the Year.
Yep.
Heard that a bunch.
Yeah.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Titty Boy, a.k.a. T-shirt in the Pool.
Great one. Great one. I think it was cool, too, that we had cataloged all these things that morning.
Yeah.
And then you took screenshots of the document.
Yeah.
And gave them to the internet. It was just like, yo, here's this.
Here's this.
And people were like...
Enjoy. Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Fuck the Frail Shit, a.k.a. Anna Nicole Smith.
And that's one that people were like, yo, if you finish with that...
Yeah, and I did.
You could walk off this stage. But it was a tough competition. It was great.
Yeah.
It was great.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Motherfucker, a.k.a. Vice President Mike Pence.
Right, right, right.
Yo, what up, it's Jeff, a.k.a. Getting Deep in That Hole, a.k.a. Searching for Baby Jessica. Yeah, there were a bunch.
There were a bunch, absolutely. Ones we didn't get to use. Again, we have like 400, 500, so many of these things, and we're going to bring them back. Do like an Instagram versus version of this. Again, for all of our Patreon users, there will be specific things for you that we will not duplicate, that won't be like for mass consumption, just for our friends, our family, our true supporters, our contributors, our friends over at patreon.com/it's3l. Jeff, on the podcast today.
On the podcast today is Fadia Kader.
Okay, so Fadia Kader, people know her from Instagram. She is basically the artist whisperer. She is the one who is in contact. You hear her voice in the background of the Teddy Riley and Babyface verses. You know her history working at Def Jam and Complex and the parties that she started down in Atlanta. She's a wonderful human being, an amazing chef. And we talked to her about community. We talked to her about, obviously, Instagram's success and the need for that community these days. And we talked to her about like really getting her start in Atlanta and moving her way up to New York. It's a really, really fun conversation.
Yes. Also Paul Wall.
Yo, I don't know how many guests we've had so far during this run.
100 something.
It's been like 130, 40 something, I think.
Whatever.
But this might be the most excited that I think either one of us was, because it's Paul Wall.
By the way, so nice.
Nicest guy. So is his team. Shout out to Jeremy Carellis for putting the play in motion.
Yep.
But shout out to Goo. Shout out to Paul. Man, this is one of those where it's like, 20 minutes was not enough.
Yeah.
You know?
We have to do a full episode.
And we can also call him back regularly.
Yeah, like, whatever. There's no rules.
He has a new project coming up with Lil Kiki. He's doing a lot of stuff. And man, his energy is just tremendous.
Finally, we had Ben Dietrich on the podcast. Now, I want to say, Ben Dietrich, I have invited on the podcast more times than he's been on. This is his first time.
Yeah.
But he's sort of like the Matt Damon of Jimmy Kimmel. Because it's been like three or four times when I've been like, oh, and then rescinded the invite. And I apologize to Ben.
But you don't do it in a mean way.
I don't want Ben to think that it's like about him. And I don't want Ben to think that it happens to anybody else. It is just our thing.
You
want to
make him feel special.
Where it's just happened. Like Jim Jones came around
and it
the
was like,
same day.
Ben, we gotta bump you.
Yeah. It was at the exact same time. He could only do it during Ben's time. I'm so sorry, Ben, but I'm glad that we were able to make this conversation happen. We talked to Ben about basketball. We talked to him about T.I. We talked to him about
French Montana. Okay, so it's a lot of stuff. It's really fun. Again, Ben will be back.
Or he won't. Yeah. I don't know if he's even going to accept the invitation next time, but it was very nice that he accepted it this time.
This is a really fun episode. Jeff, right now, we're going to call out to Los Angeles and talk to our friend, Fadia Kader. Fadia!
What up?
How are you?
Hello. I'm good. How are you guys?
Good, thank you.
We're good.
Fadia, we have to get to the most important news of the day, and there's a lot to talk about, but you got your hair cut by your wonderful husband, Mario. Can you please tell us about the thought that went into this, whether you were scared, and how it ultimately turned out?
I stepped out of the shower and I was like, I am so tired of trying to do something with this hair. So
let me make Mario do it. Yeah.
And I was like, Mario, I really need help cutting my hair right now. And, you know, I guess it's based on trust and love. Yeah. A lot of freaking trust.
When you guys exchanged vows, did you ever think that this was going to end up with Mario cutting your own hair?
Never. Ever. No. I think, honestly, I don't think he would even ever let me touch his hair.
Oh, really?
And cut it. No.
So this is all one-sided.
Yeah, it's not what's mine is yours and what's yours is mine.
There it is.
And how did he do?
He did great.
Oh, well, there we go.
Wait, is he in the room?
Yeah.
He is in the room.
Right, so, yeah.
Yeah, blink twice.
Blink twice, Mario. You feel like you're in danger.
What you have to realize is that I'm an artist. When she asked me to cut her hair, I just looked at it like second grade, arts and crafts. All right. Pull out the scissors. Here we go.
I mean, we low-key did use the arts and crafts scissor, though.
I love this. Wait, how much instruction did you have to give Mario before he actually put scissors to hair?
Yeah, did you show a picture of, like, Jennifer Aniston?
No, can you imagine? You know, one time I tried to cut my hair like hers, not realizing or not thinking because I was so young.
Oh, no.
That my texture of my hair is not Jennifer Aniston's hair.
Fadia, so, you tried to cut your own hair?
No. I went to the lady at the salon and, you know, she's a hustler. So she's like, okay, I'll cut your hair like Jennifer Aniston.
Oh, my God.
Knowing full well I have a head full of curly hair. Like, I will never have straight hair.
Oh, my God.
But no, I just put it in a little ponytail and I was like, snip, snip. And then when we took it out of the ponytail, one side was longer than the other.
Oh my
so I was
God.
Like, what would my hairstylist do right now? And I remembered she always brushes it to the front and tries to like cut it even. So that's what we ended up doing at the end.
One of the things that we love about you, Fadia, is your sense of community, and that translates into obviously your work, but I think at home you've cultivated this regular thing where you would have people over, you would cook for what seems like hundreds of people, hundreds of guests who would come over to play cards and do the Hot Ones challenge and just hang out for an evening. How much do you miss that right now?
Honestly, I miss it so much. We just bought a house, and I was so looking forward to, like, hosting all the homies. You know, like, it's an open space. We have a massive backyard, and I was just, like, just waiting. And then, you know, we bought the house about 3 weeks before we all had to shelter in place and quarantine. So it's been a little bit disappointing because all I want to do is, again, like, I'm Middle Eastern. I'm very Arab. When I cook for, like, a family of 50. Yeah. I don't know how to just cook for two, you know? and that's honestly a big reason why we always have people over, because I love to cook, but I cook a lot. So it's like, why not just feed the homies a home cooked meal? So it's been hard, but it's also been such a blessing because, you know, how often in this lifetime do we get an opportunity to just like pause and get put on timeout by Mother Earth or whatever higher being and recalibrate, you know? And I feel for a lot of friends like in our industry and creatives that have been either furloughed or let go or due to circumstance. So I'm working that much harder to make sure that if I can't build community at home, I'm trying to build community that much more on Instagram.
Absolutely. Well, I was going to start when you said pause. I immediately started thinking about your dog, which is named Cat, and your cat that's named
Mouse.
And, And but I don't want to go too far down that path. I'd rather talk about how on Instagram you became like, we always knew that you were like the go-to person for us, but it turns out you're also the go-to person for like troubleshooting like sound issues.
This is like, I feel like, and correct us if I'm wrong, this is like when our mom calls us for answers on Instagram, except you have Babyface and Teddy Riley calling you for help.
I'm assuming you guys heard my voice.
We did. Yo, by the way, so I recognized it at that moment, and then I was like, wait, was that Fadia?
This was like, you know, the two people whose voices we recognized were Dr. Dre calling and Fadia calling.
You know what's so funny is that, fun fact, Babyface is like my number one favorite artist of all time, and you know, I was troubleshooting in real time, so I didn't get to enjoy it like everyone else did. Like, what is the irony? Like, this is a moment I've been looking forward to forever.
Oh, my God.
And I spent it troubleshooting a lot of things, you know? But what's hilarious is when I went on Twitter later on, I legit saw, like, when I guess everyone heard my voice in the back end talking to Teddy. Like, it, you know how when there's an earthquake in LA, everyone goes to Twitter and is like, is that an earthquake?
Yes, yeah.
You know? Same thing. Is that Fadia? That's Fadia's voice. Oh, Fadia's coming to get you, Teddy. Oh. You know, like, it was pretty hilarious.
That's because Fadia has the same kind of impact as an earthquake in Los Angeles.
Yeah.
Well, wow, guys. I'm like, can you come manage me?
Yeah, like that should be your poll quote.
That's right.
Or like one of these people.
I think that it's been such a special gathering on a regular basis, these versus battles. You know, there was no way to plan that type of success to begin with.
Well, how did you get involved in all of that?
Yeah, so I mean, you know, like you guys said, I'm kind of but what we do on the music side at Instagram, we're a mighty and small team of three. I would say, like, out of the three of us, I'm probably the most external facing just because, like, I have a lot of relationships in the industry. So we've always lent ourselves for best practices and educational purposes, you know? So it's just, like, more than ever now, everyone is just calling because everyone is at home and trying to figure out what to do. And the easiest way to connect with an audience is where? On Instagram.
Mm-hmm.
Like every artist, every public figure, every us, like the way I connect with my family and friends is on Instagram, you know?
Yeah.
So it's only natural that everyone is like flocking right now to the one place where they can all connect the dots and, you know, feel like a sense of community. You know, be it you're at home alone in a studio in New York, or, you know, you're stuck with family, or you took a vacation somewhere and now you're really stuck somewhere. Like the sense of community that Instagram is providing for everyone is key. So it's just like natural, like it just became a thing, like, oh, I'm an artist, I want to go live. I saw, you know, John Legend do it.
Yeah.
Let me go and like call Fadia or call Perry or call Marcus and find out how to do this the proper way. And in regards to like verses, you know, I've been a fan of Swiss forever and I've worked with him in the past. Like he's been by the office and I've provided that educational moment with best practices. And, you know, I was a fan of the battles he did 3 years ago,
yeah.
If you guys remember, but obviously we didn't have a live with feature and he's always been great. And I think Swiss is like such a brand marketing like genius.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the first night that him and Tim went live, like you saw the struggle. It was real. Like, they're like, how do I do this? Oh, so I'm in the background emailing with their respective manager, Gary, who's Timbaland's manager, and an old friend, Daniel Glogler, who put us all on the
email. Yeah.
And I'm like, hey, do this and do that. But that's what I do day in, day out. I give best practices. And you see the magic, you know, like same thing with D-Nice. Like, it's a matter of trend forecasting and recognizing that something is bubbling there and making sure, like, we will never take credit for what these creatives are doing. Like, Versus is Tim and Swiss Beats, you know, D-Nice is D-Nice, you know, but at the end of the day, we provided them a platform to create that magical moment.
Yeah.
And that's what we do is like, here's the, like, let me teach you how to fish and you do your thing. And that's exactly what they do. Like, they come up with the creative ideas. And there's times where, you know, I'm a creative strategist, like, day in and day out, first and foremost. So, like, there's certain conversations that I'm a part of, but it's not my place. Like, it's not an Instagram thing. It's that artist. It's their moment.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think part of the love that has been around all of this is because of its organic nature. You know, when D-Nice was spinning and we saw Klep on Twitter saying, yo, this feels like everyone from 825 Worldwide Plaza is in here.
The former Def Jam building.
Yeah, is in here at once. We jumped over there, and it was like, you know, saying hi to Young Sav and Steve-O and Latrice and Emmanuel and Shari and all these different people who we were friends with. And that, in the early days of quarantine, felt like a really great human connection right there. And then to see it gain, you know, momentum and climb, you know, to 100,000 at one time and see that, you know, every political candidate was in there, that felt really good because it felt organic to begin with. The same with the versus battles. And I think more and more it's like the platform is there, and the ones that really win are the ones who start in this true and authentic way.
100%. And, you know, you have to also think, like, at the beginning of the quarantine, like, it was a lot of uncertainty. You know, it was a lot of fear. Like, it was a lot of emotion that was, like, taking over people, and grief and loneliness. Like, right now, we've all kind of, like, a little bit adjusted, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But in that moment, that was one of the few moments. I mean, even for me, that was a really hard week. And I remember being in D-Nice's, like, you know, set before that big Saturday set, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And I just, you know, I was in there, like you said, like, talking to my homeboy Tyrone, and I'm like, yo, pass me the drink.
Yeah,
can I come in? Latrice, can I jump in your section? Like, even though you guys know, I don't go out. Right. I haven't been to the club. I was a club promoter for years. But it was fun to play role, like, to role play, sorry. And, you know, I feel like we were just having fun in that moment. And it actually made me want to go to the club when all this is done.
Yeah.
And I think that's what it's all about, is just creating a safe space to, like, make everyone feel like we're all in this together. Like, you can't stun on me. I can't stun on you right now. It's all good.
Absolutely.
We're all in club quarantine, just, like, having a good time or watching these battles with our favorite artists who are legends.
For sure.
And they deserve their flowers in real time.
Fadia, you were talking about trend forecasting. Did you at all predict where things would be going with, in terms of, like, demon time, in terms of, like, all these other things that popped up on Instagram?
You know, it's only natural. I think, like, the cool thing about, you know, I mean, there's nothing cool about a pandemic, let's be clear. But the cool thing about challenging times is that it's a moment to, again, recalibrate. And it's a moment to be creative and to have a renaissance. You know, like, the last time we had a major situation happen in the U.S. was a recession.
Mm-hmm.
And what came out of it? You know, you had, like, platforms like Twitter come out of it, Uber, you know, like, Pinterest. Like, it was a tech social boom that came out of a need and a necessity, sorry. So I think, like, you know, could I have predicted it? You know, yeah. Of course. Like, people are stuck at home. They're going to get creative. And quite frankly, like, you know, shout out to, like, everyone that's having fun and getting creative, but do it where you are safe.
Yeah.
And keep in mind, like, you know, it's like, we're all going to go out in the real world after all this is done. So be mindful of what you're doing now.
Yeah. Oh, don't worry. I'm gonna hire all of them.
Oh, perfect.
Yeah. Fadia, talk about need and necessity. Can we take it back to when you were living down in Atlanta and you felt a dearth of parties and functions for a certain type of young adult out there, and you created parties that didn't exist. Can you talk about how you made your mark in Atlanta probably a decade ago?
Yeah, definitely. So I started off, not a lot of people know this, but I started off actually in the fashion industry as a stylist. I knew I liked music, but I didn't really have like an understanding of career paths in music. So I just was like, okay, I'm a stylist. I went to school for fashion merchandising and visualizing. And why can I work with artists as their stylist? So I started working with, like, you know, assisting different stylists that would work with Rihanna and Nas and J-Lo and a whole bunch of folks. And then I met up with Bow Wow's mom, who had a boutique in Atlanta at the time. And wow. I started working for her, but then met Big Boy's wife and her best friend, Charlita and Tracy, and they had their boutique, and they really, like, you know, just didn't have a marketing background like I did, even as a young kid. So I just jumped in and started, like, working in their boutique as their creative director. But at the time, like, I got introduced to some folks who are artists in Atlanta that were pretty underground. But they were, like, kids like me and young adults like me who, like, you know, could go to Stroker's on a Monday, which is, or on a Sunday, sorry, mm-hmm. which is a strip club, you know, go to, like, Magic City on a Monday, but then be at MJQ on a Wednesday night.
Mm-hmm.
So, or be at an art gallery or a charity function later on in the week. And there wasn't really a scene for, like, kids that were, like, dabblers like me. Like, you know, other creatives, predominantly black and brown creatives mm-hmm. that could have a safe space to A, network and build community and have fun, you know? So somehow I got convinced to meet these artists and I started managing them because, hey, why not? I've never been a manager and who doesn't, you know, like, I obviously I'm sadistic like that. And I was like, challenge, yes. Put me in, coach. But, you know, in managing a new act in Atlanta that didn't necessarily have a lane at the time, I was like, you know what? Oh, you won't book my artist to perform at Smith Soul Bar? Cool. I'm going to book my own showcase. Mm-hmm. And the first showcase I ever did was with Janelle Monae, Jaspex, my group called Proton, Grip Pliers back in the day. I mean, shout out to all of them. B.O.B. was there. And it just kind of, like, it ignited this, like, you know, passion of bringing my fashion sense of detail, like trend forecasting from my fashion experience to music, right?
Yeah.
And I was like, okay, let me trend forecast who I think has next in the music space and let me book them ahead of time in a secondary market like Atlanta and, like, you know, get them first. And I had the success with, like, you know, with my old partners and Shameless Plug, BAME, Jabari and Gerald. The first show we ever did with Shameless Plug was Drake's first sold out show that got him booked, you know, all over the country.
Pretty good.
Yeah, like, that was a big show. And actually, a lot of people don't know, like, we did that show May 2nd, 2009. I was supposed to book him in December and then in February again of that year and then, you know, 2008. But he kept telling us, like, oh, I'm dropping this thing with Lil Wayne's label. Like, let's wait. And I'm glad that we waited because it created such a, like, you know, moment for him in that time. And even down to, like, J. Cole and Dom Kennedy and so many artists that we were trend forecasting, like, I just got off on the fact of, like, oh, I know about this new artist. And a lot of times I got put on because I had a partner in crime in John Gotti from the Smoking Section.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Shout out to John.
So shout out to John because we, with Gotti, like, I started, you know, like, identifying the fact that I'm not getting press pickup because I'm in Atlanta and I'm not politicking with the homies up in New York, like, you know, with the journalists and whatnot. But he took a chance on me being in Tennessee, and he became like our media outlet, like honorary media outlet for what we were doing in Atlanta, and helped curate a lot of those A3C stages and whatnot.
Super dope. And yeah. I think another big point, and I saw you speak about this recently, was when you knew that it was the right time to move on from Atlanta.
Mm-hmm.
I think that, you know, it's one thing to build something, but another thing to know that, like, you've done what you can do and you move on to something different.
Yeah, no, I mean, it was really hard because when I started, Broken Bougie is the name of the party. I felt like such a sense of, like, dedication and loyalty to my city and the community that I built, because before that, like, we didn't have a place to go and build that kind of community. So I felt like, you know, I had the weight of the world to make sure I committed to seeing it through, but at the same time, like, I wasn't getting what I needed. You know, like, I was putting in, when you start something new, you typically either A, have investors and capital, you know,
yeah,
to do it, or, you know, like, you just hustle your way to get what you need to get it done. I didn't have that. I didn't have investors. I didn't have capital. And I damn sure wasn't about to hustle on a corner to get anything, you know? So, like, any money coming in was getting put right back into the scene and into building this, like, community in Atlanta. And I think because it was so popping, like, people had this misconception, like, oh, well, Fadia's good, like, she doesn't need anything. But all the while, like, here I am about to get evicted, yeah. You know, like I was doing things, but I was putting it and dumping it back either into the artists that I was managing or the shows that I was producing or the parties. So at one point I just had to be like, okay, Fadia, what about you?
Mm-hmm.
You know, where do you come in this scenario? Like, everyone else is eating. You know, what are you scared of? Like, it's not a failure. And I had this misconception that if I walked away, you know, it meant that I failed at what I did. But when I finally realized that in that moment, you know, you can create a blueprint, but you might not be the person that eats off of that blueprint.
Mm-hmm.
It's okay, because that's what visionaries do and trendsetters. That's what we do. Like, you create something and you set it off into the world, and other people can, like, you know, replicate the magic as much as they can, but you go and recreate or do something all new all over again.
Absolutely.
And that was, you know, that was really key for me in that moment. Like, I was like, it's okay, like, you did what you could for the city, but you have to do for you now, and you can do more for the city of Atlanta being in New York.
And, you know, this is all part of a book, and that is just one chapter of it. You know, I think that there's a lot of people now who are like, well, but I had this whole thing beforehand, and this global pandemic has, you know, really thrown everything up into the air, but people can regroup, people, and it may take time, it may take no time, it could be somewhere in between, but people can pivot, and people can adapt, and people can invent new ways to get themselves moving in a new direction, and that's fine. And that's part of your bigger story. Fadia, you know, we were scheduled to be in Los Angeles for a month. We were going to be there all through May. We were so looking forward to stopping by your guys' place. And I think it's something to look forward to when all this gets settled, once there's a vaccine and people travel again. We can't wait to stop by and see you and Mario. Hopefully we can
hang out with Kat.
Yeah,
Mouse.
Yeah, all of that. And in the meantime, thank you so much for what you're doing for the broader culture. I think it's so important for all of us to feel a part of something, and you have facilitated that. You have played such an essential role in that, and we thank you, and we love you, and we appreciate you, and we'll be calling to check in.
Thank you, guys, and thank you for your patience with me and everything. I mean, you guys are like legends, and thank you for keeping us laughing and entertained and educated and introducing us to, like, some of our favorite, you know, culture creators and execs and future legends and current legends in the game.
Thank you,
Fadia.
Thank
you.
And now, Jeff, we're going to call down to Houston, Texas, and get on the phone with the one and only Paul Wall, baby. Paul Wall!
What up?
What do you do, baby?
What's happening? How are you?
I'm great. How y'all doing?
We're doing all right. First and foremost, how are your family and you and everybody getting through these uncertain days and weeks and months?
Man, you know, I was always taught, my mama always taught me, don't complain no matter what's going on. Find the good in the situation and survive, make it through every situation. I don't know if it's just because of, you know, certain aspects of my childhood I had to deal with. That's just the mentality, you know, we had. But, you know, with all that's going on, man, it's really hard for me to focus on the bad just because I see so much negativity going around. You know, with so many people dying, many people losing their lives, you know, and losing their life, not just dying, but the life as they knew it. And, you know,
while they're still here. Yeah.
Right. You know, so being it, I don't have it. Nobody in my family has it.
That's a blessing.
Yes, yeah, it's a huge blessing. Now, true enough, I'm missing out on a lot of money. And, you know, my life has changed too. My kids' lives have changed. My son had he turned 14 while we was on quarantine, you know, so I had a birthday during quarantine too, although, you know, I don't celebrate my birthdays as much, but still the whole thing, man, it's like, man, you got to count your blessings, man. Just be grateful.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So let's talk about a little bit of silver lining here, which is that you partnered up with the Houston Astros and Mattress Mac. I know you're raising money for the Houston Food Bank. Can you talk a little bit more about that?
Yes, sir. Yeah, man. Shout out to my boy Alex Bregman from the Houston Astros. He came with the idea. He said, "Hey, man, let's raise some money. Let's raise some money for the food bank. Every dollar provides 3 meals. You know, and if you text Feed Hugh, FEEDHOU to 41444." Now, it'll send a link to your phone, and you can donate as little as $5. And $5 is 15 meals right there. So, you know, every dollar really do count, man. So, big shout out to the Houston Food Bank. All the food banks out there, man, they do good year-round, man. Thank you. Thank you for what you do.
That's super, super dope. We want to take it back to one of our favorite eras, that 2004-2005 Houston sound, that culture that really shifted everything in hip-hop. You know, we're from New York. It meant a lot to hear you on, like, what you've been sipping on with Jim Jones and Puffy. You know, it's such a regional thing down there in Houston. Obviously, shout out to UGK for setting it off. But for all you guys to go national back then when MTV was visiting with, like, My Block and all that, how did it feel to be on a bigger, more countrywide level?
It felt amazing. It was unbelievable to me. It was something that I didn't, you know, was possible. You know, not only that I could make it, but that people I knew and grew up with could be a success. So it was completely unbelievable. A dream come true, prayers answered, you know, and that's still the mentality, still how I feel to this day. It just, man, I'm just grateful for God blessing me, man, because this is what I prayed for, work hard for, still to this day. So, you know, to be able to do it on a major scale like that, and especially with people that I know and love, admire, grew up with, friends, you know, to be able to do it like that, it's like, you know, it's almost like Ja Morant and Zion going to the NBA together.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? The only difference is we got to play on the same team.
Yeah.
Well, at least for the most part, you know what I'm saying?
But, yeah.
Well, was it a bigger deal to get Still Tipping or to get Grills? Like what felt like more, what felt huge to you?
It's difficult to say. I think Still Tipping brought that unity, and you know, because it had me, Slim Thug, and Mike Jones on it, and it was such a huge song, and it just launched all three of our careers on a national world or international scale. So Still Tipping for sure was huge, but at the same time, Grills, being that I sell grills as well, and I'm known for wearing grills, and just known for grills, I think the grills really took it to just the next stage. Also, that grills was, you know, doing it with Nelly and Jermaine Dupri, you know, those some hard hitters right there. So, you know what I'm saying? They definitely took it to a huge level that, for my career. It was like a promotion. It was like a commercial for our grill shop.
No question.
Nelly put me on the song, it just completely, now I already was known, but it just completely co-signed me on another scale on, in, you know, just in the world, not just in the rap world, but in the world.
Yeah.
So, you know, I got to say the Grills, it really elevated me a little bit more.
Well, what'd you think when you heard, you know, Sycamore mixtapes with TV Johnny as one of the guys doing the, you know, the co-hosting?
Oh, yeah, I love that, man. I love that. We used to always get Johnny to do drops just anyway. So we'd be on the road or somewhere and Johnny would be with me. You know, it's my boy.
Yeah.
He would kind of be like my sidekick kind of, you know, like, you know, but it's my business partner anyway. And we're making Grills. So it's just a tag team, you know, of me meeting people, knowing people, and then introducing them to Johnny. Johnny, he'll take care of them. Let's get that grill. And then from there, Johnny take handling all the jury aspects. So, and Johnny got a great personality. So
oh, yeah.
We love Johnny. So, you know, we'd always get him to, and he got a real thick Vietnamese accent.
Yeah.
But he's Houston to the core as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, we get him to do drops. And, you know, it's kind of, it, man, he's crazy, man. He'll always say some stuff. And, you know, he's funny. He got a great personality. And you can hear that through his drops. And, man, yeah, man. Boy, hey, shout out to my boy TV Johnny.
Well, actually, how did you meet Johnny?
I met Johnny being that I wanted to buy grills. And the cheapest way I could get a grill at the time, being that I was 17, was to go work for the person that sold them. And the guy that sold them came down from New York, my boy Crime. He came down and was selling them just out of different stores, kind of selling them out the trunk, hustling them on the streets. And I worked for him doing street promotions. And then eventually he took me and introduced me to Johnny. He was like, hey, I'm gonna change your life. I'm going to introduce you to the man. And he hooked me up with Johnny, who was actually making the grills. We were just kind of wholesale salesmen. You know, but Johnny was actually making them, casting the gold, setting the diamonds, you know, buffing, polish, clean, all that kind of stuff. So teaming up with Johnny, you know, it was the way I could get my grills the cheapest. and I saw a real deficit in the market, just because most of the people that sold grills at the time, they didn't really care about the customer. They were just trying to make a dollar.
Right. You know? Yeah. So,
I came in with a different approach. I came in with a customer appreciation approach, you know, taking care of the customer, giving them a, you know, good business,
yeah,
making sure they're happy, even if there's an error or something wrong, even if it's an accident or if it's not even my fault, still making sure the customer's right,
mm-hmm.
making sure the customer's happy so that they'll come back, they'll get a new grill next time, they'll eventually bring their kids in, they'll get their, you know, they're going to come get their mama and they wife and their daughter, you know, Mother's Day presents, birthday presents, Valentine's presents over at the jewelry shop. So, you know, it's just a building a good rapport with the customer. And it worked.
It paid off, yeah.
Yeah, it worked.
Yo, Paul, here's probably the most important question. Everyone's masked up these days with the virus out there. Are you still wearing your grills underneath the mask?
Yes, sir.
Hey.
We've been trying to find some, like, clear mask so I can, you know what I'm saying?
Oh, that'd be hard.
we found some, but they're not exactly the safest of masks. So we like, okay. So I've been just doubling up on masks, man. We got some printed masks that got our grills printed on the outside of them, too.
That's dope. Yeah, I mean, you just got to make sure that they're not, like, the clear Nikes that it's, like, you know, you can see, like, the toes through them. And you're just like, oh, yeah. You know.
Yo, Paul, when you think about your entire career, is there a piece of, like, merchandise or some kind of promo item that sticks out to you? Because for us, our friend Ashley Kamenowitz, who works at Atlantic Records, to this day has one of your bobbleheads in her office, and that is, like, the greatest thing ever. Do you have a piece of merch or a promo item that really sticks out to you?
Yeah, I for sure probably say the bobblehead, just because to this day there's a lot of people who still got them in their office. And I got a few left. I just found in my storage, I seen like a box or two of them. So I got like probably like 10 or 15 of them left. And I just be like, damn, I don't never want to sell them, because I'm like, damn, I'm going to get rid of them. I ain't going to be able to have no more. So, I don't know. I be thinking about trying, you know, getting a pop figure made or just going another step and getting, I don't know. There's a sculptor. I think he's from New York. He makes these like desk sculptures of, he's got a few different ones. He got one of Sean Price.
Oh yeah, 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 yeah.
Yeah, he's hard. He got, man. So I've been thinking about doing something like that, but you know, he does his art by hand, and they're pretty expensive. They're like $250. So you know, with that, it's more of a piece of art than it is commerce just to make a profit. And a lot of times, that's what it is. You know, it's not necessarily about making money. It's about putting something out there. That's a piece of art that people can enjoy,
and it lasts. Makes,
yeah, exactly, exactly.
Paul, what was your first time in New York like?
My first time in New York was surreal, like a lot of people. You know, the Big Apple, the biggest city, you know, in the world. You know, maybe not officially, but it is. You know, the Mecca of the world. So to be there, especially for America, especially to be at the birthplace of hip-hop, all of those things, like, man, there's so much respect, admiration I have for the city. So many of my favorite artists are from there, favorite athletes, just, you know, just all of those things. And that's the kind of the feeling that we would get when we travel around the country. But of course, New York is definitely one of a kind city. I remember the first time we went too, it was me and Chameleon there was signed to Paid in Full Records. That was a local label out of Houston. And we had a couple deal offers that most of them were kind of BS, but we had one from Epic and Sony, and they had flew us up there. We had went to meet with them. The deal didn't work out, but I remember, just to give you the era of the time, this is right when Wankster first came out.
Oh my God. Wow.
So this was 50 Cent, Wankster just came out on the radio in New York. This, you know, so because I remember them playing it, and they like, brand new 50 Cent, you know, like
crazy.
It just came out. So that was our first time in New York, and it was like, you know, I felt like a kid going to the airport with their mama, and your mama went to the bathroom, and you just standing there like waiting for your mama to come back. Like, what do I do? That's how I felt. It was like I felt lost, but I was like in amazement. I was just, you know, watching everybody, looking at everybody. You know, I'm observing too, so I like looking at people and, you know, laughing or being curious or whatever. Man, it was a great time though, man. I love going to New York, man. It's definitely its own vibe, man. The people in New York are one of a kind, man. Shout out to New York.
Yeah. When you think about your time with Todd Moskowitz and Joey IE, what can you say about those guys?
Man, those guys know what they're doing. They took me to to another level. Like, the doors they opened for me, Joey IE introduced me to so many artists.
Mm.
Dipset, Fat Joe, Diddy, oh my God.
Khaled.
Khaled, man, I can't even, matter of fact, on the song with Khaled, I gave him a shout out, Joey IE.
Yeah, we love that. We love that so much.
But I think he got a little flack for that. we tried to put him in the video too. And, you know, some people were like, wait a minute, what you doing? Why are you trying to be all up in the video? Like, did you tell him to do that? But he didn't tell me to do that. I'm just trying to shout him out, show him love. That's still my boy to this day.
Yo,
I don't talk to him.
Paul, straight up, like, when we were new to the business back in, like, 2007, 2008, we went to SOBs here in New York, right? And Joey walked up to us, and we only knew who he was from that Holla at Me video.
That's dope.
It was so crazy. It was so awesome.
Todd as well, man. Todd is both of them, they have different personalities, so I would be with them in different, you know, experiences. It would be different things. I remember one time we was in the studio, and we were sipping syrup. We were trying to get Todd to drink some syrup. He didn't want to. He's like, nah, I don't want to. I don't want to. But he was curious about it too. Like, damn, y'all are really just sitting there drinking cough medicine? What are y'all doing? You know, like, hey, come on, drink some. Drink some. He's like, nah, I'm good.
Can you talk about a person who means so much to you and so much to us in our career and everything? The legend, Bun B.
Oh man, Bun B for sure. He's the, you know, he was like most of the artists of our era, like in Houston or just not even Houston, Texas, but for sure Houston. And he was the big bro to everybody. I mean, he kind of was the big bro to everybody in the South, you know, a mentor to everybody. Man, really, that's really how it is. He was a mentor to everybody in the South that came out in a certain era. He was the go-to person that you get him on a verse and he'd kill it.
Yeah.
You always hear him. That's one thing that always stood out to me, too, is that Bun B, his features, if it's a feature in Bun B, he was gonna kill it.
Yeah.
And that to me was something that, you know, it motivated me. Like, man, that's how I want to be perceived. When it say featuring Paul Wall, oh, you gonna click? Hey, we see what he's talking about. I know he's gonna kill it. And you know what?
When Bun and Static got together and they did Trill Static maybe like 6 months ago, 7-8 months ago, something like that, and then they put out the deluxe version and you showed up on that song, Jon Snow, you fucking destroyed that.
Man, thank you, man. Yes, sir. Shit, I gotta give that credit to Static though, because boy, Static will bring it out you, man. Boy, them beats he got, God.
Yeah, man.
That aura he got, boy, he gonna bring it out you, man.
But absolutely.
Yeah, Bun B, though, man, that's Bun B, man. Shout out to Bun B, man. That's big homie.
Yo, what can you tell us about, obviously we saw that you put out that new single, So Trill, with Lil Kiki and Slim Thug, and shout out to Slim Thug, by the way, another guy that we know him for a long time who, you know, glad that he's doing better through all of this. But we know this is off that album, Slab Talk, coming out that you and Kiki got. Tell us about that.
Lil Kiki is somebody, you know, he's my favorite rapper. I always has been since I first heard rap. You know, to me, growing up in Houston, he was my Big Daddy Kane or Rakim. Mm. You know, this is how we were introduced to hip-hop, was through the Screw Tape and through Lil Kiki. So he always has been, you know, the leader of the culture, you know, and my personal favorite. So to work with him like I have in the past, it mean a lot, but especially on this, because it's a full length album. This is our first time doing an album together, so you know it's something we had the idea several years ago, and we just wait till the time is right, and we started working on it seriously, like, you know, around 2018, and in 2019 we started really going in. And when we got to the end, we like, okay, let's put a plan together. How can we? Because you know, today's day and age with music, there's not a lot of marketing, long term pre marketing. It's all post. You throw it up, and then you market it. After you put it out. But we said, you know, with this one, let's build up a little hype with this one. Let's kind of take it back to the older model of doing things, you know, where you put it, you know, months out and you promote it for months. Because at the same time, we had other projects we were releasing in the meantime. So it was like, you know, I released my project, he released his project, and we just start promoting our group project. And then as time go on, we start getting a little more and more serious with it. But, you know, it comes out June 6th. It's called Slab Talk. And this, we don't really have any features on there other than Slim Thug and Big Pokey. Mm. Those are basically the only ones. We really just wanted to keep it me and Kiki on this one. So
yeah, man. Well, listen, like, Break 'Em Off still gets spin up here. Like, for us in this house, we play that all the time, man.
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Listen, Paul, we love you. Take care of yourself, you and yours down there. Congratulations on everything. When this is all over, I hope we can sit with you down for like a full hour and a half episode. You know, we know you got all the stories down there and all the personality. We appreciate you. Thanks for everything you've done, and be well.
Yes, sir. Likewise. Thank you for having me, man. God bless y'all, man. See y'all soon.
And now, Jeff, let's call over to Brooklyn and finally get on the phone with our friend, Ben Dietrich.
Yo.
Ben!
What up?
What's going on, guys?
What's happening? How are you?
I'm pretty good. I mean, I feel like there are a lot of people who are dealing with very tough times and in perilous situations. So if being bored and sick of hanging out indoors is the worst that we have to put up with, like, I'm willing to say everything is all good.
Absolutely, and totally agreed. So we will see you at the protest march tomorrow, right?
We're going to the State House.
Yes, let's go. Bring your pitchfork, Ben.
You've worked in rap, you've worked in sports, you've worked in New York nightlife, and I think that your chronicles of New York at night have been like some of my favorite pieces to read. I was wondering what you think about New York being shut down now. I mean, obviously not good, but for New York City, is there anything good that can possibly come out of this?
Yeah, it's so hard to say, because the cynical side is that this is an accelerant for everything bad. you know, that's just like my natural cynicism. But there's this little kernel of optimist that says maybe this changes New York and makes it better. Maybe we can be a cooler, more humane place. Okay, open up the streets to pedestrians and sidewalk al fresco dining. Let's have open container rules taken away. Let's legalize marijuana. All those offices that were in Manhattan that no one wants anymore, maybe those can become, you know, interesting places. They could become a nightclub, but, you know,
yeah.
I'm speaking about this in terms of, like, coronavirus is curtailed.
Yeah, of course, now. Yeah.
And, you know, and I do have that idea. Like, what if we could say, get rid of Amazon? What if we can get rid of Seamless? This, like, utopian idea of, like, New York is the new Berlin. But the reality is probably, like, people, you know, stuff will get, the little guys will go out of business, stuff will get bought.
Right.
More condos will get built.
Yeah.
But specifically in terms of nightlife, you know, I do think we had reached a really dead period prior to this, where Manhattan was too expensive, people are too spread out throughout Brooklyn to, like, easily get into sort of downtown New York on a regular basis. Like, back in the day, everyone hung out, like, beneath 14th Street, and you'd go party to party to party.
Yeah.
And now it's, like, kind of the LAification, where there might be something in Gowanus, there might be something in Greenpoint, there might be something in Bushwick, there might be something in Ridgewood, there might be something in Tribeca. And it's really hard to kind of, you know, have a circuit when it's like that. So
yeah.
I would like to see Manhattan come back. And maybe if now the culture is shifting towards working from home, and we've seen that commercial rents are not necessarily feasible for some companies, maybe we'll start having opportunities for venues, for music, for nightlife, for parties in Manhattan again.
Well, so we're on the Upper West Side, as you know. You're down in Brooklyn. Everything is localized at this point, and no one's taking the trains. No one's really veering outside too much. When you do make it out in Brooklyn, is there a sense that, and I know that Brooklyn is, you know, gentrified, and that's well known.
Yeah, Ben was the gentrifier.
But do you find that any local businesses are making the effort to stay open, and people are making the effort to go into those places to keep this type of Brooklyn still alive?
I've seen, and this is in, like, the North Brooklyn area, I've seen, you know, some, like, slice spots stay open, which I'm like, that's great. Like, that is a little bit of normalcy that is highly appreciated. The ability to walk over and grab a slice in a square and walk home. You're like, almost normal on a nice day.
Yeah.
And I've noticed some bars, at least, are doing, you know, kind of curbside, where you walk up to a window, they'll pour you a beer or make a cocktail, and you can, like, walk around with it. And I think the nice little pleasures that not only you can see a place that's trying to stay alive and not just fold completely, but also make this a less sort of stressful and hostile time.
Yeah.
But, you know, I really do have a lot of concern that maybe I didn't initially about the survival rates of places that we really like.
Mm-hmm,
you know, when we thought this would be a month, I was like, I think we can handle that. A month makes sense, but, you know, you're hearing about more and more places, whether it's Lucky Strike or some places around me in Brooklyn or places in Manhattan, that owners are really second guessing whether it's worth the trouble of trying to reopen again, whether it's worth re-upping leases, et cetera. So I think the prognosis is kind of grim, to be honest.
Yeah. You know, everybody saw the pictures of the West Village that came out this weekend and how packed those parks were. I was wondering what it's like in Williamsburg. Like, what is the energy like over there? Are there people out? Like, what does it look like?
I definitely, going through, like, Greenpoint and Williamsburg and other parts of Brooklyn, South Side, on nice days, you certainly see people out. And I know that, you know, you get that telephoto lens, you get your scolding shame photo up on Twitter. You know, you get a lot of interaction off of, like, oh my God, there are so many people in the park. I think 99% of people are doing a good job. There are certainly some individuals who are maybe not social distancing like they should be. And, you know, they could do better. But overall, I think people are doing a good job. It is weird, though, because the only time you really see people is, like, jogging around, and then on those nice moments where the sun is out and people, like, go to find a small patch of sod to sit on. Like, you know, and I've heard about parties that are still going on. That's not something I'm into right now. Like, I know it's still happening. People are throwing house parties and stuff like that. But I think it's a very, very small sliver of the population. I just want to defend New York overall, and I think it's unfair that a photo of, like, a group of people in a park becomes, like, emblematic of, like, New Yorkers ignoring the coronavirus. The streets are empty all the time, man.
Considering every Sunday night that we all watch, and by we all, I mean the entire world, watches the Michael Jordan documentary, The Last Dance, do you feel, especially in this weekend's episodes, that maybe in retrospect, Patrick Ewing has gotten a bad rap?
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, it's the same way that if you look at the way Michael Jordan has been interpreted by younger generations as a guy who sold sneakers, a guy who was the face of a crying Jordan meme. Ewing is kind of now viewed as a loser. And I do feel as if the boomer narratives that have changed the way that people think about Patrick Ewing and Charles Barkley, guys who did not win a championship, has kind of poisoned the greatness of some of these guys. You know, looking back at how Ewing performed in that series, I had to refresh it myself. In my mind, I'm like, I'm sure Patrick Ewing shat the bed. No, he balled out. He was fantastic.
Yeah.
No one else on the Knicks did jack shit. Like, Ewing was great. Averaged like 25 and 11, two blocks, two steals, 53% from the floor. Like, come on, give this workhorse some respect. The Knicks had a fantastic defense, which he anchored. And he was their only scoring option. That guy, like, carried the Knicks. Like, give him his props.
Absolutely. So, considering that, if we put you aside as a Patrick Ewing defender, and we put, like, Jeff Van Gundy aside, because you know he's always going to ride for Pat, I would expect that someone like Charles Oakley would sort of, like, run to his defense. But meanwhile, Charles is out here and...
In the documentary.
No, well, not, yeah. Charles for like the last year has sort of had some like issues with Patrick Ewing, and it's been playing out in the media. I would think that like Oak would be there, but apparently not so much.
Well, Oak is Michael Jordan's best friend.
Yeah.
You know, so his loyalties here, once Dolan stopped letting him come to the Garden, like, all right, who's buttering his bread? All right, it's MJ. Oak, you know, an excellent player, Nick for life, all those things that go along with being a member of the 90s Knicks. Yeah, I would say he's Team Jordan at this point. He's not really Team Hubert Davis, I guess.
One thing that a lot of people have not been talking about that we've lost, you know, given this pop culture and sports and entertainment pause, has been March Madness. And you, as a upstate New York guy, as a Syracuse Orange and Orangeman fan, how do you feel about people's college careers ending without a real March Madness? How do you feel about, like, you know...
Well, what does it mean for the draft? I mean, like, everything moving forward.
Well, as someone who is a Syracuse fan and grew up loving the Orange back when they were, you know, the since-canceled Orange Men.
Yes.
You know, I do have a soft spot for, like, the old-school Big East. But a lot of that has eroded due to my distrust of the NCAA.
Sure.
So anything that hurts them at this point is kind of okay by me. Like, ooh, no tournament. That's arduous to feast your eyes upon. So, like, I think the NBA is definitely snaking them a bit here by saying, oh, by the way, we'll pay guys like $500,000 to play in the G League.
Yeah, yeah.
And the NCAA is like, I thought we had a deal. But, you know, like, if we're putting this in different terms, the NBA ran off on the plug.
Well, is there any part of you that bought into the Big Three?
Not really. But as long as it keeps those guys playing basketball and not announcing, I'm with it.
Well, who then would be your worst case scenario announcer for a player that had like just retired and was sort of like dabbling with the idea of getting on television?
Marv Albert.
Well, I think the announcers that parrot previous generations are the most grating, because, you know, you see someone like Kendrick Perkins, he's like an entertaining guy, but he's almost like boomer cosplaying.
Right.
You know, he just left the NBA, and he's there like, Draymond, for disrespect Charles Barkley again. I'm like, no, defend your own generation. There's enough guys from the 90s who are, you know, gung-ho about defending their own era. Like, Kendrick, tell people that Draymond is better than Charles. What? So, like, my nightmare are all these guys getting sort of pigeonholed as old school tough guys. I want someone who comes in and is like a J.R. Smith, who's like, nah, the young guys shooting threes, you know, showmanship.
Yeah.
Sprint floor. You know, just appreciate the modern game for being exciting, or at least offer a counterpoint to the idea that the 90s were like the end all be all of basketball.
Well, so I think about like guys who may be sort of on the younger end. Like let's take out like the Reggie Millers and let's take out the Chris Webbers. When you think of someone who was like on the younger end and joined media and not necessarily like his own actions, but sort of his own actions, is Jason Williams, right? So he's carved out that lane where he's a younger guy who sort of understands the younger generation. What do you think of Jason Williams as opposed to guys like Chris Webber and Reggie Miller? And did you have any feeling when you saw the other Jason Williams, J-A-Y-S-O-N, in last night's episode of The Last Dance?
Right. I was trying to get to which of the three Jason Williams are we discussing? Well, right. So the one who was originally drafted by Duke after, who was drafted by the Bulls after playing at Duke and is now an announcer, I think he tends to veer sort of retrograde as well. You know, I can't say I'm totally familiar with the nuances of his opinions, but I've seen enough kind of float around Twitter where I think he also is a guy who's a little boomer poisoned.
Mm-hmm.
And I feel bad for guys like Chuck because, you know, Chuck has to sit there and argue with Draymond, where Draymond's talking about rings and Chuck almost seems to have internalized that.
Mm-hmm.
He was an incredible player, so great, and he doesn't really seem to put himself in the same category as guys who won championships. He's like humbled himself because he didn't get a ring. I'm like, Barkley, you were a beast.
Yeah.
Just like Ewing was.
But isn't that sort of the same argument that goes into music as well, where it's like first week numbers have become the more interesting argument for a lot of people, whereas it really should be more about how long lasting stuff is?
Yeah, I mean,
or is that a bad analogy? I don't even know.
Well, I think we're looking for metrics, right, that are just not complicated.
Yeah,
we don't want to look at real like metrics and get in the mud with like, you know, I don't know, whatever you do, use like BPM or
right.
or PER. Like, you know, we're just trying to find something that's like, hey, six rings. Here are the SoundScan numbers. Here's how many YouTube plays it had. We're just clutching at something so we can make an argument that like five is more than two or something.
Ben, you are the first person who really put French Montana on my radar. Which was like very early on, and I'm so appreciative of that because I became French's biggest fan. I wondered what your perspective was in all of this French versus Kendrick Lamar sort of back and forth that was happening the past month.
I mean, look, Kendrick is obviously a gifted rapper. He approaches music with a craft that is foreign to what French does. But are we really saying that he's got more hits than French?
Like, no.
See, this is exactly, like, by the way, like, this is sort of the same argument we were just talking about.
I
but
know, yeah.
I fuck with it.
For me, you know, he also has these like little cheat codes where was Work his song? No, but he's on the remix. And there's a bunch of those records, like Bobby Shmurda, not his record, on the remix. You know, if we're doing the beat battle style, he's got a strong, like, hit after hit after hit, you know? Put Chop It Down up there.
Yeah.
I'll take that against, like, 90% of Kendrick's catalog, and that's a song that probably a lot of people don't even know.
Well, I mean, it's just songs that I would rather listen to, like, 100% of the time. But, Ben, we first met you when you were really working with XXL, when you were, like, traveling around the country. You were going to, like, Rick Ross's house. I wonder if you have a particularly good rap journalism story.
Well, one that was kind of interesting, I remember interviewing T.I., and we were in Atlanta, and it was late at night in his studio. I want to say it was like somewhere in like an industrial Bankhead area. And he was so polished and smart and charming that I was just getting nothing. He was so great. And like I had to accuse him of snitching. Not because I necessarily was like, you're a snitch. I'm like, I just have to get under his skin a bit. So I was like, I said it in like as respectful a way as I could. And he went on a rant, and he stood up, and he was, like, marching around, like, you know, Foghorn Leghorn. And he gave me all my good quotes the next minute and a half. So, like, I think that was a good one, where you're like, sometimes you just kind of have to, like, be antagonistic to get your the good material. Because these guys are really excellent interviews. They're smart. They can outthink you if you play by the rules. Sometimes you have to get in the mud a little bit.
Yeah. Well, from getting into the mud to mud slinging, would you be down for a 50 Cent Ja Rule versus?
I don't know. Is there still beef with, like, Murder Inc. henchmen?
Yeah. And, yeah.
You know, people who, from, you know, alleged reports, tried to murder 50 Cent.
Yeah.
If it's all, like, music, then hell yeah. I don't really know how Ja wins against 50 Cent.
I think
today.
That Ja would win just by it happening. Like, I think that that's, like, that would be his win, you know? Like, just to even be, like, on the same level. Because 50 as a cultural icon is so much bigger that it's almost just, like, why is he even bothering with Ja Rule, who is such a footnote in everything, you know, other than, like, Firefest. Like, what, that was his only that was his only thing, like, and that was, like, 2 years ago, you know?
Do you guys think 50 is a bit underappreciated right now? This talk of Patrick Ewing is making me think of 50 in that way. Like, not that he's viewed as, like, a choker or anything. Like,
no,
he's viewed as a winner.
But yeah, absolutely. Even if we're just talking about music.
Oh, I think he's underrated, but I also think he's done so many things that he's, like, self-inflicted upon his legacy, that it's in the same way that, like, Eminem, you know, like, it's Eminem was so big and so great for a moment, but because of all the stuff that's come afterwards, it's like, well, yeah, but, like, if he had stopped, you know, 15 years ago, then it would have been, like, amazing.
Yeah, and someone like Ice Cube too. Part of it's just generational. The when you're elevated to superstardom and then that group ages out, then how does the next generation know you?
Yeah, I mean, like, even with Jay-Z, Jay-Z has, like, up and down periods too, right? Like, everybody hated him during the period where Magna Carta Holy Grail went to your Samsung phone, and then, like, you know, the next album, it's like, oh, well, we love Jay, and we've never not liked Jay. You right. know, like, I think that everybody has sort of, like, periods. It's just, like, people get used to Ice Cube, people get used to 50, and they sort of need to switch things up to win people back again, or to, like, to remind, like, you sort of need a documentary in the same way that, like, Jordan needed this yeah. documentary to become the,
more than the crying meme face. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, Cube was, like, the baddest man on the planet. He was controversial. He was scary. He, from a rap perspective, he was great.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
He was arguably the best rapper out, making the best albums and scaring mainstream society the most.
Yeah. But now he's, are we there yet? You know?
Now he's the big three.
Yeah, exactly right. Ben, listen, take care of yourself over there. Take care of your surroundings, you and yours. We love you. Stay creative, stay engaged, and we'll be checking in on you.
Thanks, man. I appreciate you guys giving me a buzz. And, you know, look, we're all in this together. Whatever the various experts say, all we can do is just, you know, wait inside until the Playboy Cardi album drops.
Shout out to Ben Dietrich, shout out to Paul Wall, and shout out to Fadia Kader. Jeff, are we back tomorrow?
We are back every day forever.
As always, guys, now for real, for real.
Sure.
We'll see you guys tomorrow.